Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. I am your host, Greg Gazin. Since 1959, Toastmasters' most prestigious award, the Golden Gavel, has been presented annually in August at the Toastmasters International Convention to an individual distinguished in the fields of communication and leadership. This amazing list of Golden Gavel honorees include Dr. Joyce Brothers, Walter Cronkite, Stephen Covey, Tony Robbins, Lisa Sun, Julian Treasure, Zig Ziglar, and others. And this year, we have the honor of speaking with the 2025 recipient who is no stranger to the Toastmasters podcast. And to introduce this honored individual is our special guest co-host for this episode, who is also the co-founder of the Toastmasters podcast and also not a stranger to our show. He is, of course, the amazing and illustrious Ryan Levesque. Ryan, it's great for you to be here today.
Greg Gazin, so awesome to be back with you on the show. It's been a long time. And when you told me about this opportunity to come back and chat with, let's face it, my favorite guest of all time on this show, Matt Abrahams, it was, as I said, it was a no-brainer. I was super, super excited to be here and to pay homage to Matt Abrahams.
Well, then why don't you take the honors and enlighten us about our guest today?
Okay. Matt Abrahams is a lecturer in organizational behavior at the Stanford University Graduate School of Business, the author of two books on public speaking and communication, and the host of an internationally popular podcast, Think Fast, Talk Smart. Matt is also a highly sought-after keynote speaker and communications consultant and coach. He's helped numerous presenters prepare for high-stakes talks, including IPO roadshows, Nobel Prize award presentations, and appearances at TED and the World Economic Forum. Matt is featured in the May issue of the Toastmaster magazine in Paul Sturman's article called Tearing It Up, 2025 Golden Gavel Recipient Scores Successes on Stage, Online, and in the Classroom. Matt has appeared on Greg's other podcast, Toastcaster, three times, and he's the Toastmasters podcast most frequently invited guest. Greg, I'm sure you'll provide all the links in the show notes.
Absolutely.
And today, Matt is returning for his sixth appearance on the show. Matt Abrahams, welcome back to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Well, Ryan and Greg, it is a thrill to be back with you. You know, on Saturday Night Live, they give a fancy jacket when it's your fifth appearance. I'm still waiting for something to show up in the mail. Come on, guys.
We'll have to put the request into headquarters.
All right. Work on that, Greg. But great to be with you, and thank you for the kind words. And I look forward to the conversation, as always.
Likewise. So first of all, congratulations, Matt, Golden Gavel recipient. Amazing. I'd love to ask you, what went through your mind when you got the call?
I was just honored. You know, it was very exciting. As you both well know, I am a huge supporter of Toastmasters. To be recognized as somebody who's added value to the field of communication and leadership touched me deeply, and I hope that it just gives an opportunity for me to continue to spread some of the words that I do to help people hone and develop their skills and really highlight how important that it is to work on those things. So for me, it was quite an honor, and I hope to parlay it into helping and reaching even more people.
Wow. And of course, longtime listeners are familiar with Matt, but for those of you who are new to the Toastmasters podcast or Toastcaster, to get to know Matt just a little bit, I'd like to start off with a kick. Now, not going back to the womb, but literally start with a kick. So, Matt, if you could take us back to that high school speech contest and the infamous karate kick.
Oh, you're so cruel. No. My last name is Abrahams, A-B. I always knew where I was going to sit in classes and school. Teachers, and I am a teacher, can be lazy sometimes, and we always order people alphabetically. And so I always knew where I sat, and I always knew I'd go first. And so the first day of freshman English class, Mr. Meredith was my teacher. Each of us had to stand up and explain, what did we do that summer? So I got up, and I don't even remember what that summer was. I was 14 at the time. And at the end of the class, he came up to me and he said, you're good at this talking thing. Those were his words. And I need you this Saturday to go to a speech and debate tournament. So every teacher, I later learned, had to send a student. And I was his student. And I think it really, when I meant a student, I think it was because my last name was A. And he sent me, I said, what am I going to speak on? He said, something you're passionate about. And so I was then, and I still am, into the martial arts. So I prepared a speech on karate. So I show up at 7:30 a.m. on a cold, foggy morning to a high school gym where the speeches were going on. I show up, some of my friends are there, the parents of my friends who were forced into judging this thing are there, and the girl I liked is there. And it's my turn to speak, and I was so nervous. I forgot to put on my special karate pants, so you can see where this is going. The only other advice Mr. Meredith gave me is he said, start with something that really stands out. So I thought, great, I got this in the bag. I'm talking about karate. So I start the first 10 seconds of my 10-minute speech on karate with a karate kick. But because I had the wrong pants on, I literally ripped my pants from zipper to belt buckle in that first 10 seconds. I was mortified, as were, believe me, talk about an attention getter. I got everybody's attention because it was loud. It was loud. And there was a pause there for a moment. Luckily, the teacher that was somehow drew the short straw and had to be there with all of us, she threw me her fluorescent pink sweater. I wrapped it around my waist. I finished the presentation. I did really well on that, mostly, I think, out of sympathy than anything else. And it was in that moment that my interest in anxiety and its influence on communication really took hold. And I really think that that's what put me on the course to be fascinated by communication and to do research into anxiety management and the other things that I've done. But that was a pretty traumatic moment. And as a coach and as a teacher, I can honestly say to most people I work with, you will never be more embarrassed than I was.
So on that note, as a teachable moment, what did that moment teach you about recovering from, let's say, the unexpected?
Well, so it taught me to always have your karate pants with you whenever you do something on karate. But what it reminded me, and even when I tell the story, I can still feel my heart start beating. What it reminded me is a couple things. First, your audience wants you to succeed. It's very rare that you are giving, that you're communicating in a place where people want to see you fail. Now, people might disagree with what you say. They might have challenges and questions for you, but most people aren't out to get you and see you fail. So there was a lot of support in that gym at that moment. It's a good reminder, I think, to all of us, and it's a way of helping us manage anxiety. The other thing that really helped me, and this I actually attribute to my martial arts training, is I took a really deep breath and I got really present in that moment. And that helped me get through it, because you can imagine the many, many things that could have popped into my head about myself being stupid and unprepared and how could I do this? And this is going to be, you know, thank goodness this was in the world before phones existed as they do today. So getting present, taking deep breaths and reminding yourself that people are there to learn something from you, not to judge you and see you fail. Those are the takeaways I've had. And those are things that I've helpfully passed on to others as they prepare to communicate in front of others.
Every crisis creates an opportunity.
There you go. There you go. Yes.
Matt, when people are standing on the stage, whether their pants have just been ripped open or not,
yes,
a lot of them are looking at this as just an opportunity to survive. Like, I just want to get on the stage, get off, and have this in the rearview mirror of my life. But I want to double click on this notion of being present that you mentioned. And I think you gave us a key to it a moment ago. You mentioned the power of taking a deep breath. But what else can people do to shift their mindset from one of survival to being open to the moment, open to the audience, and just, as you said, present?
Yeah. So this is such an important question. Communication happens in the moment. And in fact, the word communication comes from the root to make common. If you think about it, commonality is through connection. I have to be present. I have to respond to what's happening so I can really connect with you and make this, whatever I'm saying, common. So being present is important. And one of the things that is so valuable that Toastmasters does, I think table topics are a great crucible to study this notion of presence. When you have something that you have to speak spontaneously about, speak impromptu, the only way you're going to do that successfully is if you're in the moment, understanding what's needed and responding. So how do we get into this place? Well, there are physical practices. Deep breathing is a great one. There are mental practices. So quieting your mind. Many of us, especially when we're nervous or concerned about what we're saying, we have a lot of negative self-talk. And if we can replace that with some kind of mantra or positive affirmation, and it doesn't need to be over the top, like I'm going to be the best speaker ever. It can be very simple. The one that I use to help quiet my mind is I just say, I have value to bring. When I am communicating as a teacher, as a consultant, as a podcast guest like I am now, people have invited me or chosen to listen to me. And I have to remind myself that people are listening because they think there's some value I have to bring. And that's an opportunity for me. And when I say that, it calms me down, puts me more present. But I'll tell you something I do, and I did it right before I got on to record with both of you. I like to say tongue twisters to help me get present oriented. You have to focus to say a tongue twister right, and it warms up your voice, so you get that added benefit. So I will always say the same tongue twister three times before I do any kind of major communication event to help me get present oriented, to help warm up my voice. I remind myself that I have value to bring and that I'm here in service of my audience. That gets me out of my head. And if I can do something physical, walk around the room, shake somebody's hand, those are all ways to get present. And that's how I do it to help me.
Wow. I seem to recall the tongue twister that you use.
You want to do it with me?
Well, I don't remember it exactly, but I remember you saying...
I'll say it. You can repeat it. You want to do it?
You might say a naughty word if you mess it up.
That's right. Okay, so we're going to do this. Ryan and I are going to do this. So repeat after me. I slit a sheet.
I slit a sheet.
A sheet I slit.
A sheet I slit.
Now let's see if Greg's going to have to bleep you. And on that slitted sheet I sit.
And on that slitted sheet, I sit.
Oh, there we go. We made it without the bleep. And all jesting aside, in that moment, Ryan, you had to be really focused, right? You weren't worried about, you know, what you're going to have for dinner or what, you know, somebody's going to think about you. You were like, I got to say these words the right way. That's the power of being present. And that's what helps you communicate better.
Fantastic. Love it.
It's obvious, Matt, that to help us get better at our communications, you blend the theory with the practice. Besides these tongue twisters, I'm wondering, could you perhaps share an example of how you help your students apply communication principles to real world business situations?
Oh, absolutely. Everything that I teach and everything that we do, I'm all about being tactical and practical and applied. Some of the grounding foundational principles that allow you to be present, that allow you to connect, first and foremost, you have to spend time thinking about who it is you're speaking to. Many of us have this faulty belief that successful communication is just getting the information out there. That's not the goal. The goal is to have the information received, digested, and perhaps acted upon in the way that you were hoping. Mm-hmm. So we really have to be audience-centric. We have to spend time thinking about our audience and what's specific to them and their needs. That's the first step. And then once we do that, we have to think about how can I package this information up so that it's relevant, logical, and accessible. There are lots of tools that I teach to help with all of that. So how do I make it relevant and salient? I really, again, reflecting on what's important to the audience, what their values are, what they believe the right vision and mission is. Structure is something I talk about all the time, but there has to be a logical connection of your ideas, and leveraging structure helps. And then finally, we have to remove ourselves from the curse of knowledge that we suffer from. Whenever we speak on things that we know, we suffer from the curse of knowledge. I might use jargon. I might go too deep too quickly using acronyms. So we have to remind ourselves that the person or people we're speaking to don't have that same level of experience, knowledge, passion for what we're doing. Everything I teach is practical and tactical. And the way we get there is first by knowing our audience, and then second by crafting messages, again, that are relevant, structured, or logical, and accessible.
Well, Matt, this makes me wonder, in this world where we have so many different voices and perspectives on communication, I wonder how might you describe your philosophy of effective communication, if you could just sort of encapsulate it into a soundbite.
For me, effective communication takes place where a connection is made and information is transferred with high fidelity. So fidelity is the accuracy and clarity with which information is transferred. You know, I believe you two and I are of a similar vintage, and we remember hi-fi stereos way before we were carrying around our music in our pockets. Fidelity in hi-fi meant the quality of the music was phenomenal. Now what we carry in our pockets is far superior, but it's really those things. Communication is about connection, and it's about transmission of meaning in a high fidelity way. So that's what I look for in terms of success. I have a goal. Was that goal achieved by being clear and connected with those I'm speaking to?
And I think that transfer, if I'm not mistaken, happens a few different times, right? As it starts in my head, I've got this notion of something I want to say, and then it comes out of my mouth, and there's a certain level of fidelity you're looking for there, but then also the ability for that message to then translate to the person who's hearing it.
Yeah, exactly. So you are summarizing a very simplistic but important and one of the oldest models of communication, the transactional model of communication. A sender sends a message to a receiver through a channel, and the receiver provides feedback. So the message starts in your head, hopefully in response to what you know about the audience, the context, the culture, the channel through which you're communicating. So you craft a message that's congruent for what's important to the person, the contextual cultural variables in the channel. And then after you deliver the message, you're looking for the feedback that you receive. Does the person seem to be agreeable? Are they confused, et cetera? And then that starts this cycle going back and forth. So we essentially volley back and forth between being a sender and a receiver. Mm. So the communication and the fidelity happen at lots of different levels going back and forth, ping-ponging back and forth.
Well, that makes me think, as we talk about models of communication, you've been at this game for a long time, Matt.
Did you just call me old? Wait a minute. Yes.
You started teaching at Stanford 20 years ago. As you look at some of today's top admired public speakers and contrast that with those who were filling seats 20 years ago, how has speaking changed?
Communication is ever evolving. It changes in terms of formality, in terms of language and tools, and I find it really fascinating. So clearly, none of your listeners are going to find this surprising. Communication is getting much more truncated. People's attention spans are far shorter. People are multitasking a lot. So you have to get that bottom line out there first, and you're competing in a context where there are just there's lots and lots of communication, right? Your message is one of many that somebody is bombarded with. So the attention span and the length of messages. When you put on top of that additional ways of communicating, we now have the ability to communicate through emojis and other types of graphical information, maybe to the benefit or detriment of our fidelity. And then obviously tools, right? We're communicating through our phones, through our screens in ways that we weren't able to. What I'm noticing in my students is, for example, I need to, in a given lesson, change things up more frequently. I need to include more physical activity to get people to focus more. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. It's different. My students are able to communicate very well, but the expectations are different. And where we see this as a challenge is in the workplace. In any given workplace, you can have four or five different generations and people have different expectations. I was just working with a coaching client of mine who was lamenting in a frustrated way that he has to say to his much younger colleagues, just pick up the phone and call me, because you know they're trying to solve all of these things through Slack or text. And he's not comfortable with that. And he knows that from his perspective that he can resolve this with a quick call. So we see these tensions of the evolution of communication playing out in the workplace today. I, for one, find it interesting and intriguing. Others find it very frustrating.
I've had someone apologize to me for making a phone call because there was too much back and forth communication by email. They said, "I hope you don't mind that I called you." And I'm thinking, I was just about to call you because I'm old school. So yeah. I believe in actually picking up the phone and having an analog conversation.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something that was shocking to me. So my latest book, Think Faster, Talk Smarter, has been translated into 13 languages. And I was doing an interview for the Korean version with an American podcast interviewer in Korea. And she told me that they have started at the college level a class in Korea that teaches kids how to make phone calls because they don't know how. They don't use their phones for that. I was flabbergasted, but I can actually see how that would happen. But yeah, it's a different world, Greg, than the one you and I grew up in.
We've come full circle.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
And now it's like an act of aggression if you call someone without texting them to warn them first, I hear.
Oh, I know. I called my younger son on his phone and he yelled at me for calling. He's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm calling you. He's like, no, this is for texting. I'm like, okay, no, it's not, but yeah.
Well, you could say it's better to communicate via voice when we're in the vehicle.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah, we can't text in the vehicle. Well, again, we're talking about getting better at communication. And of course, that bridges nicely into a little chat about Toastmasters. Mm-hmm. Matt, you are a member of the Feeling Chatty Toastmasters Club at the Google headquarters. That was in Mountain View, California for 4 years. You being an accomplished speaker for many years, what was it that brought you to Toastmasters for the first time? And what was one thing that you took away from it?
Well, I took away many things. I am a big believer that the only way to improve communication, much like any other skill, is three things: repetition, reflection, and feedback. Repetition, reflection, and feedback. Toastmasters provides many, many things, but one of the opportunities it provides is an opportunity to practice repetition. And that's what I was looking for at that point in my career. I was trying to hone and develop my skills, and I needed a place of like-minded individuals who were focused on improving communication, who would be kind enough to give me the feedback I needed to improve. So I was motivated out of my own personal development, but I knew I could get good quality feedback and the reps that I needed. Toastmasters also encourages, in some ways mandates, reflection. All three of those ingredients I was able to get through being a Toastmaster. Now, in terms of what did I take away besides friendships and a sense of common purpose, I learned very specific skills around how to start, how to stop. One of the skills that I still teach to this day and attribute to Toastmasters is that you always maintain the stage. If you're transitioning, maybe introducing somebody or team presenting, the stage is never empty. There's always somebody there. I learned that lesson at Toastmasters. I share that all the time with attribution to Toastmasters. I took a lot of very tactical ideas, but also just a sense of purpose and knowing that there are others out there like me who want to hone and develop their communication. It was a lovely group, really great, smart, challenging group. And I learned a lot from them.
Awesome.
Talking about other ways that you have sort of brought your work to the world, 5 years ago, you started the first podcast for the Stanford School of Business. You mentioned it a moment ago. And as Simon Sinek would say, start with why. I'm curious, what was your why? Why did you decide to embrace podcasting as another way to share your work? And what did you want to accomplish with the podcast?
Thank you for asking. Think Fast, Talk Smart is over 5 years old. It was really an experiment. It was an experiment that the business school wanted to run. They'd never done a formal podcast. They had taken some lectures and essentially edited them and called it a podcast, but it was really an edited lecture. And I had given a talk for them, and there's a long story behind that talk, but it was a talk on effective communication in spontaneous moments. It somehow got into the Google YouTube algorithm and ended up doing very, very well. And so they knew that there was an appetite for communication topics. So when they wanted to explore that, they thought, okay, we know this topic is interesting. We're doing something uncharted. It's going to be a little nerve-wracking. Let's go to the guy who teaches people how to be calm when they're communicating and ask if he'll do it. They came to me and asked, and I thought, wow, this is a great medium to talk about communication. While I've written books and I enjoy writing books and I think people should read books, books can only take you so far when it comes to communication. You have to actually communicate to get better at communicating. And I thought podcasting is a really interesting way to model communication, to engage in communication. So I jumped right in and we ran it as an experiment. The first episode rolled out January 2020. 6 weeks later, the world shut down due to COVID. And people were really struggling with how do I communicate in this new world? So we were affiliated with a well-known institution with content related to an immediate pain point people were having. And so people began to listen and we began to build an audience based out of people's curiosity and necessity. And from there, you know, we're releasing our 200th episode at the end of April and moving forward. So it's been quite a journey, but it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm certainly a regular listener and I learn so much from the podcast. In fact, a lot of podcasts I listen to at 1.25 or 1.5 speed, I have to listen to your podcast at 1x because I need to absorb absolutely everything that's being said. In fact, your podcast has become so popular that last year it won a Webby Award for the best individual business podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, there are thousands of podcasts out there, thousands of podcast episodes, probably even millions, I guess. You interviewed author and CEO Coach Kim Scott on the power of feedback and radical candor. I'm just curious, out of all of your episodes, and again, the thousands of others out there, why do you think that that one was the one that was selected?
So there's some internal workings about how Webby and Signal Awards get done. One, Kim's concept about feedback is she articulates it well. She has a very clear model and approach. Feedback is something many of us struggle with. And so I think people resonate with the topic. Kim and I also know each other. We're friends, we're neighbors, we go on walks together. So I think we had some rapport. So I think we had a lot of things going for us in that episode. It was a crucial topic that people struggle with. Kim is incredibly articulate and has a really good structure model for it that people can grasp. And she's great at marketing. The notion of radical candor, I think, is just a great way of packaging that. And there's some rapport that she and I have that you know, I think we three have some rapport, but sometimes these podcasts, you just don't feel that. So I think those are the three reasons, quite candidly, why that episode was chosen and did well by the Webbies, but also by people. It's a very popular episode.
And I'll drop a link in the show notes to that episode.
Thank you.
Well, we've been talking a lot about things in the past and in the present. Let's fast forward a little bit. You've got your keynote coming up at the International Convention, your Golden Gavel presentation. It's called From Silence to Brilliance, How to Craft Compelling, Clear Communication. Matt, what can people expect from your presentation?
Well, I hope they'll learn something useful and have a little bit of fun. So this is all predicated on the F word of communication. And it's not that naughty one, Greg. Don't think that. It's focus. Attention is our most precious commodity in the world today. And we need to help people be engaged. And you do that through focus. And I intend to take people through a series of four key concepts that help us to be more focused in our communication. It has to do with we have to be concise, we have to be relevant, accessible, and precise as well. And there's a difference between concision and precision. I walk people through very specific practical and tactical steps they can take to make their messages focused and engaging. And if you do that, they'll learn more, they'll take more value from what you're saying, and you will feel as if you're delivering something of meaning and consequence. So it's a talk I'm very excited to give. It is a talk that is still being developed. I have a little bit of time before I deliver it, but I'm very excited about it.
Well, the F word I was thinking of, Matt, was fun.
There you go. Good. I'm sure that's exactly the right. That's the exactly right F word to have.
There you go. And folks, if you've had as much fun as Ryan and I have had on this episode, I encourage you to share this episode with your family, friends, and fellow Toastmasters. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Google, Apple, Spotify, and everywhere you get your podcasts, including YouTube podcasts. And don't forget to take an opportunity to read Paul Sturman's profile on Matt called Tearing It Up, 2025 Golden Gavel Recipient Scores Successes on Stage, Online, and in the Classroom. And of course, taking Matt's keynote From Silence to Brilliance, How to Craft Compelling, Clear Communication. It'll be live and live streamed on Friday, August 22nd at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And for those of you who are in Philadelphia, you'll have an opportunity to meet Matt in person at 9 a.m. following the presentation.
And you can visit Toastmasters.org to sign up for the convention if you're attending in person. And live stream details, I understand, are going to be available in July. So keep an eye on Toastmasters.org for that. Matt, before we say goodbye, where can folks reach out to find more about your book, your podcast, or to connect with you? What's sort of your digital home base online and all that good stuff?
Thank you for asking. So if everybody would check out fastersmarter.io, fastersmarter.io, you can learn all about Think Fast, Talk Smart. There's a resources page. There's a link to my books and the books of others that I've interviewed and think are really helpful for communication. The best place to reach me, fastersmarter.io. And if you're on LinkedIn, I'm a big user of LinkedIn, would love to see you there too.
Thank you so much, Matt. We're certainly looking forward to your keynote presentation at the International Convention. And thank you once again for taking the time to speak with us today. We figured after 6 + 3, 9 episodes, maybe you had enough of us, but we're always happy to have you on the program. And once again, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
True pleasure. It was a lot of fun to be with you. And I'm waiting for my Toastmasters podcast jacket. So
we'll have to work on it. And Ryan, once again, thanks so much. It's been a while as one of the original founders of the Toastmasters podcast. It's an honor for me, and hopefully we'll have you on again.
I appreciate the invitation, Greg. It was really fun to be back. And Matt, again, always a pleasure.
It's just so fun to be able to be relaxed and chat. So thank you for that.